Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, August 28, 2008. It is now about 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, and I know it's very early in the morning, and I wish someone would come call in. We do get calls this early in the morning, but usually from overseas, which is very interesting. Of course, their time is different than ours, so I guess they're listening to us during a regular daytime hour, or maybe evening hour, rather than early in the morning. But do call in 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or you can email us at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you're listening to a rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. Folks, I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com. And that two is a numeric two. Andy talks about the economic issues and how they affect you. Things are getting extremely shaky out there, folks. And if you believe what you hear on television, you may be somewhat or grossly misguided. And I'm getting very concerned that many people are just listening to CNBC News and saying, well, it doesn't appear to be that bad. Things are very, very bad. The credit card crisis is now entering the fold, together with the mortgage crisis. Banks are not lending money. There's a contraction of the current contraction of the money supply, and we may have a fall of price in goods at the same time have inflation. And what I mean by that, the actual real cost of goods may go down, but because we flood the market with money, that the prices will go up, but that will be an inflated price. And I think that's what's going to happen. That's my prediction. But it's going to be very, very dangerous to anyone who is not prepared. I also would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good morning, everyone. I have a couple of sayings here that I think are very applicable and as a follow-up to my prior broadcast. And it says here, this I got from the Information Clearinghouse newsletter, which I subscribe to. It's free, and you send in voluntary contributions, which I do. They try to wrap up the world's news all in one place. It's very, very handy for me, and they do a wonderful job. Unfortunately, they really run on a shoestring, and they do need your support. It doesn't cost anything to subscribe, and if you can't afford it, just have someone else send the money in for you, okay? And here's an interesting quote. It says, as I write, highly civilized human beings are flying overhead trying to kill me. They do not feel any enmity against me as an individual, nor I against them. They are only doing their duty, as the saying goes. Most of them, I have no doubt, are kind-hearted, law-abiding men who would never dream of committing murder in private life. On the other hand, if one of them succeeds in blowing me to pieces with a well-placed bomb, he will never sleep any worse for it. He is serving his country, which has the power to absolve him of evil. And that's from George Orwell, London, UK, 1941. Isn't that chilling? Just think of that. And we are doing this every single day, folks. Every day of the calendar year, we have planes flying somewhere, dropping bombs in an area. I want you to just think about that for a second. Everywhere. Now, this program is going to be focusing on the language we use and whether or not we really understand what's being said. We have disagreements, and we try to get a consensus, or we try to come to a conclusion, but our language is vague, especially when it comes to economics and politics. But let me throw in war as well, because war in and of itself is a very vague term. When we say war, what do we mean? Well, this conjures up, you know, the comic book, and it's Pat Buchanan mentions, he says, we have a comic book mentality about things. You know, mostly our history is comic book history. And we have a comic book impression of war. That's the really bad guys, and they have all mean faces, and the good soldiers trying to preserve freedom and liberty for the poor little children that they're saving. You know, and these are the images that are constantly brought up. But when you think about it, most of it has to do with just firing rockets, cannons, and whatever, indiscriminately. Now, I know we have discriminating bombs and whatever, and they're smart bombs, but still, they go into particular areas, and they're very powerful. They blow up everything. And most of the people that get hurt, most of them, a vast majority of them, are innocent civilians. In the Iraq conflict, well, occupation, I should say. In the Iraq conflict, hold on, I think I'm puffing too much. In the Iraq occupation, here we have smart bombs hitting areas that we think may be too dangerous for our soldiers, and we suspect that there is an insurgent there, and so we may take out the neighborhood. Now, you know, in that light, 4,100 or 4,200 of our soldiers have been killed so far. I don't know how many have been maimed, crippled in every way, shape, or form, mentally and physically. I mean, probably tens of thousands. That we don't have the figure on that. But on the Iraq side, some over 1.25 million people have been killed. And these are not insurgents. These are innocent people. And we have the audacity to say, well, this is war and there are casualties in war. We have to define what war is when we say war, and we have to define who a casualty is and why that person is dying. And all we have to do to switch that conversation over is say, let's reverse things. Let's assume they were doing that here. What would our response be? Now, I've done that to people, and you know what happens? They get angry. They said, well, they can't. We won't let them. I said, no, that's not my point. My point is that you are giving some credence and even honor to the fact that we're bombing innocent people, you know, because it's our duty, our responsibility, this is war, whatever words you want to use. Now, when I turn that around and say, well, now they're doing that to us, and millions of Americans are dying because they're trying to find the real bad guys, from their opinion, what is your opinion of the innocent people dying? Well, they won't answer the question. They get so angry, they will not continue the conversation. This is a ridiculous conversation. I'm not answering it. You know, you're a communist and all this other stuff. But we have to think. We have to reverse things around. One thing that I don't do very well I'm very conscious of this, and I hope this is a little lesson to everyone, is that when I have conversations, especially with my friends who are basically social democrats, I mean, they're socialists and they're socialists, basically. And some are communists, I think. I mean, they're just they're no brains whatsoever. They think, you know, the government can handle everything and all corporations are bad, people are bad, everyone's bad. And if it wasn't for the government, we'd be all to hell in a handbasket. But I don't do a very good job. When they make a statement, or they say, well, what'd you think of Hillary's speech last night? You know, I typically will, if I listen to it, I'll give them my opinion. And I shouldn't even do that. I should say, I really don't have an opinion. What is yours? You know, I should bounce it right back to them. Or when they say something, or they say, whatever the comment is, they'll say something like, well, you know, in this post 9/11 world, we can't have, you know, that's, it's different. And we have to ask them at that point, instead of arguing the point or debating the point, we should be saying, let me ask you a question. When you said post 9/11, what do you mean? What has changed? And you think about it, nothing has changed. Our foreign policy hasn't changed. Our military hasn't changed. Our government hasn't changed. Our economy hasn't changed. Now, there have been more restrictions as a result of that. And the reason why we have those restrictions is because we say things like, well, we can't have that in a post-9/11 world. Well, I'll be very honest with you folks. Nothing at all changed for me after 9/11. Nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. Now, my rights were taken away, and that's the government doing that. You know, and when I go to the airport, I got to take my shoes off and all that stupid stuff. But other than stupid government interference, it hasn't changed a bit. But we use that. And when people use that in an argument or any argument, when they say anything, ask them to explain that. And before I do that, I want to go back to another interesting tidbit here from the Information Clearinghouse. I didn't want to forget to do this. It says, a great many people think they are thinking when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. And that's Walter Lippmann said that. And this is the Information Clearinghouse of October 21st. A great many people think they are thinking when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. And that's very true. And as a result, all you do is you jockey around. Like, you ever listen to the political pundits when they speak? You have the someone of the Democratic Committee and someone of the Republican Committee, and they talk. And what do they say? Well, Johnson did that. Oh, yeah, well, Eisenhower did that. Oh, yeah, well, Kennedy did that. Or John, you know, and they go back and forth. Well, Clinton did that. Oh, yeah, Bush did this. I mean, you know, quite frankly, they're probably both right, but it's not answering the question. We never seem to get down to the core issue. And if you're going to be a good libertarian and you're going to spread the word of liberty, the only way that you can do that, the only method that you have is some logic. And that logic has to include asking people, what do they mean? I'll give you another example. When they say, when the price of oil went up, the politicians were saying, we have to do something about the speculators. And then everyone was saying, oh yes, those damn speculators, that's why the price of oil is up. Well, speculators may have a play in that, I suspect. Now, I understand the market, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know how the speculators would do that. Now, I know people who are intimately involved in oil futures, and these people disagree whether or not speculators have any effect on it. In fact, there are many who feel that the speculators actually have a calming effect on the market, a stabilizing effect on the market. So when someone says that, they say, oh yeah, we got to get rid of speculators. You say, fine, you know, I never understood that. Could you explain to me how the speculators run up the price? And just don't take an explanation like, well, they just keep on bidding up the price. Well, could you, I mean, on a napkin, if you're sitting having a cup of coffee, say, could we walk through this? All right, here's a barrel of oil. All right, here's a, you know, how does that work? I tell you, 100% of the time, they could not tell you. You say, well, I don't understand. You're saying the speculators are jacking up the price, but you can't explain it to me. I suspect they are too. I wish I understood it. Now, could you explain to me why you feel that way? Every single time, I can guarantee, not 99% of the time, 100% of the time, they will not be able to explain it to you. And if they did, and they start explaining, they realize that they will realize they have no idea what they're talking about. And then you can ask, say, well, if the speculators are driving up the price, why did it take them so long? Now, I don't know anything about the oil industries or oil futures or speculation. I know nothing. Why are they doing it now? Why didn't they do it 10, 20 years ago, 30 years ago? I mean, why was it that 12 years ago, oil was $10 a barrel? Why didn't the speculators prop it up to, you know, $20, $30, $40 a barrel? And they have to answer that question. There is no answer to that question. And then you have to ask the question such as, well, so far the speculators have the price of oil, and at the time when it was an all-time high, at $147 a barrel. You say, why 147? Why not 150? What's preventing it from going 150? Well, they won't have an answer to that because it's all a matter of supply and demand. Now, if you have more people buying it, that's fine. But those people in oil have to take delivery. They have to take delivery. So there's always what they call a come to Jesus meeting with this stuff. I mean, it's not like you can, there's only 20 gallons of barrels of oil and someone's hoarding them and they say, well, I'm going to give them up until the price goes up. Now, that would be someone hoarding the oil and speculators coming in, then it goes to the highest price. It would be a very simple thing to understand. But not when there's tankers and tankers of fuel oil all over the world floating all over the place on the spot market. I don't understand. No one's ever explained that to me. Well, if the speculators were so bad, why did the price of oil go down? No one can explain that to me either. Well, and I'm not going to pick on that particular subject, but you can take anything. Take the subject of energy independence. You say, well, we've got to do that. You know, we've got to be taxed, and we've got to help T. Boone Pickens because it's our drive to energy independence. What do we mean by that? What do we mean by energy independence? Why do we need energy independence? Do we want energy independence? I mean, is it to our benefit? And have them walk, say, no, I need you to walk and say, of course it is. All the money that we're giving to everybody else. Well, we're not giving money to anyone. We are buying oil. And with that oil, we are producing stuff. We are enjoying ourselves. We're going on vacations. We're flying. We're making business trips. And that's the most economical way of doing it. And part of that oil comes from the Middle East, but most of it comes from Canada. Now, why do we want to be independent of that? So we don't have to pay out the money. Well, then why haven't we done this years ago? I mean, why do we wait till now? Why didn't we do this 100 years ago? Not 100 years ago. Let's say 30 years ago, when we started to be dependent on other oil-producing countries. Well, it wasn't as critical. Well, why is it critical now? Well, our money's leaving the country. Well, if these people didn't have our money, what would they do? They wouldn't buy anything. And, you know, it's interesting when they say they, you say, what is the difference between someone in Nebraska selling to someone in Kansas, right? One state, and going over state line. Or someone in Kansas selling something to somebody in Japan. I mean, they're only political lines. And when you think about it, it doesn't really make much difference. Now, if you have restrictions where money goes out and people can't bring the money back in to buy things, and that happens in government, we put tariffs on things, right? So they don't come back and they buy the stuff from us, or they don't sell the stuff to us. You know, some stuff they don't sell to us. And then they, in turn, put up tariffs because, you know, we have a tariff on their stuff, you know, back and forth. I mean, that restricts trade. Money can leave the country, and we may make it very difficult for this money to come back. But, I mean, I'm just saying that we have to identify with the what we mean when we say energy independence. Can we be? Do we want to be independent? Do we want to make sure that we make everything here in the United States? Well, that would be better, I'm sure. You know? Well, when you think about it, then would every town be best if they made everything they needed? Every small town made their own cars, everything. They have a rubber factory. They have steel production factories. Well, no, that's silly. No, the division of labor is the one thing. And the places where the commodity or the labor is the cheapest increases the standard of living of everyone around the world. Now, that I understand. I don't understand energy independence. Now, when oil gets to a point where it becomes relatively unaffordable and other options become more attractive economically, the economic system will automatically take care of that. I mean, we're not going to run out of oil. We'll never run out of oil. I mean, even if we had one barrel left in the world, that one barrel would be so expensive no one would be able to find it. So we'll never run out. There'll be one barrel left. You get my point. My point is that we don't run out of anything. Things become scarce. And when things become scarce, the free market comes in and says, now how could I profit by this? I mean, how could we supply this service, this product or service? You know, we no longer can burn everything on using whale oil. That's impractical. So we had to go to another fuel. And it just keeps on going. And it may be hydrogen. It may be electric. It may, you know, we may have to build more nuclear power plants for electricity to power our cars and whatever. But there's a natural process that'll go through, and the marketplace handles that. Energy independence has no place in this the conversation at all. It is the same ilk of post 9/11. Makes no sense. A friend of mine said the other day, he buys trades in silver and gold, and he says, they are manipulating the economy. I said, okay. I said, I have three questions for you. Nice guy. I give him a hard time. And he's basically a libertarian. I said, Bill, who is they? How do they manipulate? And how do you define the economy? He says, okay, point well taken, you know. Well, yeah, we say that. They are manipulating the economy. What do we mean by that? Who is they? Well, the money people. Well, no. When I say who, I want, you know, John Johnson III. I want to know a name, address, social, I want to know exactly who it is. Or if not him, I want to know the company policy. And then I'm going to say, well, how do they do that? And you'll find that people don't know. You know, they, all the theys are real bad people. If you're a they, you know, you're a bad person. That's silly. If we would only think that we don't know who they is. And we do the same thing with war. Look at what's happening with the situation in South Ossetia and Russia, in Georgia, with Russia. All we concentrate is on, you know, the Russian bear is coming down. And first of all, what do we care? Let's assume that Russia came down and occupied Ossetia and occupied Georgia. So? Well, Russia is dominating the area and we got to stop it. Why? Well, they're not dominating the area. The Russians aren't that stupid. The Russians want to open up their borders to other countries. They don't want to go back to the old. They know the old way is not very profitable. There's nothing in it for them. I mean, Georgia's no threat to them. I mean, they can run over Georgia in 10 minutes. We just don't use our heads. We don't think. And it's a shame. Like this this little quip said, a great many people think they are thinking when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. And, you know, we have to learn from one another. And we have to say, I don't understand that. Could you please explain that to me? You know, folks, I'll tell you, it's unfortunate, but it's rare that anyone can. It's absolutely rare. The title of the book of Barack Obama, The Audacity of Hope. What the heck does that mean, the audacity of hope? I mean, talking about nebulous terms, what is hope? You know what hope is, folks? I hate to be just a cold blanket on everything. Hope is sitting there, doing nothing, and waiting for someone else to do something for you when you don't have to repay it because you're too damn lazy. That's hope. I want to see drive and an ambition. I want to see people striving. I'd like to substitute the hope with striving, the audacity of striving. You have the audacity to strive, and in this economy, you do in a way. How dare you try to become rich and wealthy? And yet we say, "Oh, he's so kind. He's going to have change." They don't know what they're talking about. And then we got to be careful when politicians say, well, we're going to reduce the number of troops in Iraq by this date if I'm elected president, blah, blah, blah. And then you find out the reason why he's saying that is because he's redeploying the troops someplace else, like Afghanistan or maybe Iran, you know. And, you know, we fall for it every time. You know, now, if a politician came out and said, look, we're going to take all our troops out now, bring them home, and we're going to change our posture from being an empire to becoming a democracy again, or within a republic, a democratic republic again, and we're just going to protect our own borders if needed. And we're going to leave other people alone to solve their own problems. Then I say, that's substantive, but everything else is not. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday, and he's a real social democrat. I love the guy, but he just drives me nuts. Every time he says, did you listen to so-and-so's speech? I said, it's all BS. He gets mad. He always says, everything's BS. You don't listen to anybody. I go, you get a politician up there, and he's going, blah, 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 and he tells you everything that he's going to do. And, you know, why? I mean, it doesn't mean anything. You have no idea what they're talking about. You know, we're talking about, you know, we have to have a compassionate government. You know, and they say things like, well, what you're saying is true, but that no longer holds water. We're in a different world. I'm sorry. I'm still in the same world. Nothing has changed at all. And just because we've become socialist doesn't mean that we can become unsocialist. Doesn't mean that we can, you know, backtrack and disassemble all the mistakes that we've made. And people hang on to these things. Look at the Republicans and the Democrats. They fight this constantly in this constant war of words. And no one knows what they're talking about. And yet, each one is blaming the other for the large deficits. Well, they're both to blame. One more than the other, but they're both to blame. And what I get a kick out of, all my socialist friends are so happy that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats became the majority in Congress and the Senate. And here we are a year later or so, and what's happened? Nothing. Nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse. They've done absolutely nothing. What they should have done, if they really felt as strongly as they did, they should have supported Kucinich in his impeachment of the president, if in fact they felt that strongly about it. But none of them did. And they did absolutely nothing because they wanted to save their own hides. They wanted to make sure their income stream stays in. In fact, my friend yesterday was talking about the gap between the rich and the poor. I said, there's no gap between the rich and the poor because we're a classless society. He says, well, we used to be, but not anymore. You know, I said, oh, well, where's the class? Well, there's some people who have more than others and they have an unfair advantage. I said, absolutely. You know, some people are born. I mean, a kid is born in a family, has good money, is sent to a good school. He may have an advantage over a kid who's in a poor family going to a crappy high school. Absolutely. But you can't change that. But the opportunity is there. What they want to do is they want the results to be equal. They don't want the opportunity to be equal. And that's one thing they'll never tell you. Anyway, just be careful. When you have conversations with people, make certain you ask them to clarify. Don't give them an answer like I do sometimes. Just say, that's interesting. What do you mean by that? How do you support that? You know, explain that to me. Draw a diagram for me on a napkin. And see what happens. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. That's the free life, folks. Embrace it. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, don't steal, the government hates competition. Ha-ha! With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.